All right, welcome to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. We got a three-man weave going here. Ben Sandig, you recognize my voice, presumably. You also recognize the voice of these other two gentlemen, Todd Dybas, currently unaffiliated, Adam Rubin with truthaboutit.net. Adam's like the only one here who's got the steady gig that Todd and I are bouncing around at the moment. Speaking of bouncing around, the Wizards are bouncing around in terms of consistency, and they've once again landed on the downside of that equation. They just lost to the Milwaukee Bucks. What was the final score today? That is the wrong score. They lost because Giannis had an insane game once again, even though ultimately for most of the game he wasn't even that insane. They lost 104-95. Bucks with an 11-0 run late after Wizards had a three-point lead in a game in which they had a season-high 24 turnovers. Bradley Beal still can't make a shot late in the game. Otto Porter isn't right. Yada, yada, yada. Blah, blah, blah. Here we go again. That's my starting analysis. Todd, give me what's your – I got some points to go through. What's your main takeaway as we stand here? The Wizards finishes homestand 2-3.
We were talking last week about – them in the clutch, quote-unquote, games within five with 5 minutes to go. We had another one of those today. They stumped the last 5 minutes of the game today, and they lost. And they continue to have trouble with Milwaukee, which is starting to hint at, you know, they don't want to see them somehow early on in the playoffs, certainly not in the first round and in like a 4-5 scenario. That would be very bad news for them. It's so teams.
Absolutely.
So, you know, just this down the stretch stuff needs to be better. There's no reason. It's not like you don't have multiple options. It's not like you don't have experience together. It's not like you haven't done this at a pretty high level in the playoffs in the past and even being pretty good at it last season. So that's one of the great anomalies of this bizarro season for me so far.
Adam, at Liddell's Place on Twitter, you have one primary takeaway from this game, or if you want the entire five-game homestand?
Well, I'll just go with this game. I thought Wall, sometimes when he's playing against players, it seems like Eric Bledsoe, someone from college, he gets in his mind that he needs to be the scorer, he needs to take over. He does that other games as well, but this one seemed to have been just way out of control with his drives to the basket, just forcing things. Even when he did score, that was great, but he wasn't looking to pass, and when he did, he was jumping and with no options and turning it over. And just, you know, Wall's having trouble when he does the turnovers where he's sprinting down court and just loses the dribble. That's when it's really when he goes out of control and it's sort of a bad sign. So that's what basically the last 5 minutes were, just a bunch of turnovers and poor play.
Yeah, so there's lots of angles to get to. Let's start with the kind of where you just went in terms of like the number of shot attempts for people. So last year I spent way too much time looking at how many field goal attempts Wall and Beal took relative to the rest of the team and tried to find where it made sense for them. You know, what was the sweet spot for them taking shots compared to the other teams? And basically what in the data that I looked at last year, I didn't track the whole season, but three quarters of it about, it was between like 41 and 44% of their, if they took 41 to 41% of the team's field goal attempts, the Wizards were winning like all the time. When it went up above that, is when things started to go wrong.
Especially north of 50% of the shots, right?
Yeah. In the last five games, so this entire homestand, they have taken in each game 48.7, 51.2, 40, which was the Orlando win when they scored a million points, 50.5, and 51.3.
Two of those games against the Bucks, who are hugely overloading their sides as well.
Yeah. So my thing is, look, this is basic basketball. We all have played or we all play basketball. It's not that hard, but no matter what level you're at, if you're not getting the ball, especially I would say early, you're not getting up a couple of shots, you're not getting your hands on the ball, whatever, the odds of you playing better as the game goes on decreases, especially if you're somebody who's actually thinking you're going to maybe score as opposed to, say, maybe like a defensive center or Bruce Bowen type. Well, so I keep thinking, well, Wall and Beal are taking so many shots in the first quarter. I mean, Wall had 16 points, but he was putting up a ton of shots. Obviously, Beal, you want them to shoot, but I keep wondering to what degree are we getting where these other guys aren't getting enough of the ball. We always used to joke about how Gortat would get the first play of every game. I always thought that was a good thing. Silly or not, let him get invested early. I'm not saying he's completely checking out, and same with Markieff, but I mean, you know.
Especially when John Henson's the opposing starting center. Like, you can feel free to do that once in a while. That would not be a bad idea at all. I mean, how many shots of the starter did Beal and Wall take tonight, and how many shots did the rest of the starters combined take?
So the other three starters took 20 shots total. John Wall took 22. Beal took 17.
So almost 2-1 out of those two guys versus the other three.
Right. So, I mean, you know, and look, I mean, Wall had 27 points. He got to the line 13 times, made 12, 9 assists, you know, 4 turnovers is within a margin of error for him. That's fine. But 7 of 22 from the field. And like I said, this isn't
when
just.
When did he start? First quarter?
Great question. I'm going to look 1 second here. He was 6 of 10.
He was 6 of 10 and finished what?
7 of 22.
He was 6 of 10 and finished what?
I guess that would be 1 of 12.
Correct.
Okay, so in and of itself, the amount of shots they're taking. Now, interestingly enough, to this point, second time this homestand, because this is a thing that keeps being in my head that they're taking too many shots, I brought up this idea of DeBrooks. And in each case, he didn't. Today, I specifically said that they're taking a high percentage of shots. Are you okay with that? And he specifically said, he didn't really answer that. He just said he needs more from Otto Porter to get more involved. He needs Otto to do more, run more, what have you. Which is interesting that he's now said this twice. Now, clearly, watching Otto play, he's running around like an old man, relatively speaking, for an NBA player. But he's clearly not sprinting up and down the court with ease. That's affecting his shot. It was pointed out to me that when Kelly was in the game, he, playing essentially the same role as Otto, was getting some of these open shots, and he was taking advantage of them. So it's not like they're not in the offense. Otto's not there. I think this is something to be further concerned about, both in terms of his health, but also they got to, you know, somebody has to get the ball to somebody. I don't know. I don't know how to explain that. Is he not really moving enough to get the ball? If he's not, then put in somebody else or let him sit for 4 games to get rest. I know this isn't working, and they have to get that going. So I just thought it was interesting that Brooks brought up that aspect of it for the second time on this homestand.
Well, before the Brooklyn game, Brooks said that Otto needs to get the ball more, but it was interesting, like what he said today. He didn't say, I need to call more plays for him. He said, I can't go out there and run for him. I can't go out there and get free from picks for Otto. He needs to do that. So he was implying, at least, that part of the issue with Otto's shots is Otto. It's not necessarily the plays being called for him or necessarily Wall not passing to him. So I thought that was interesting because most people just say, hey, run some plays for Otto, get him the ball. And Brooks was implying it's not that simple. So I think whether it's the hip, whether it's his other injuries or not, yeah, he's not moving as well as he did previously.
To that point, or just the fact that those three other starters are not getting as many touches, what's your sense of that?
I think there's a portion of validity to what Brooks said about Otto Porter, but also when Spencer Dinwiddie is on Markieff Morris because they're putting their better defenders on John and Brad, then you need to get the ball to Markieff Morris. And Markieff Morris, to go all, who is it, Giselle here, can't pass it to himself. Is that who had a thing about?
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Yes.
Yeah, my old friend Giselle. Right. So, you know, that's up to the point guard. That's up to the shooting guard if he's going to be blitzed to make the right decision and not turn the ball over 7 times like he did today and go 0 for 4 from the field in the fourth quarter when the game was on the line and have turn in another very poor fourth quarter, which has been a season-long trend for Beal as much as he's done so many other things well. So, you know, and Scott Brooks can say that about Porter, and he's right. But Scott Brooks also can't control the flow of the game in the middle of everything. Those decisions are up to John and Brad. They touch the ball most. They have the high usage rates. They have to help make it happen for other people.
Here's a hot take, at least a contemplative hot take. I'm only looking here at these numbers I just threw out there were the last 5 games, but it's not a – whatever, even since the last 5 games or since the calendar turned to 2018, what have you. One thing that's happened in the last week to 10 days to 2 weeks is that they've released all-star ballot numbers. And we know that Beal is, you know, like 9th or 10th or wherever he's at, and Wall was 5th. He dropped the 6th. Neither one of them may get voted in. I don't think that in and of itself is a surprise. But there has been a lot of conversation about, hey, how come these guys aren't getting more attention? Do they have to do more? Blah, 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 blah. Do we think that there's any chance that in their head they're like, well, I got to get just like, you know, you gotta get numbers count. If you're not getting the highlights, especially, which is maybe, you know, whatever. If you're not getting on the highlights, you have to make the numbers such that people can't ignore it. Do we think there's any chance that they're taking more shots of late because it's in the back of their head, they're like, hey, I gotta get more notice here for the All-Star?
Well, the people who are gonna put them in the All-Star game are the people who are gonna notice more than anyone else whether they're doing the right thing and making the right play against how the defense is playing them, and that's the opposing coaches. So I don't understand how, if they end up with, is like Brooks today post game when he thought they played pretty good defense on Giannis because it took him, what, 23 shots to get 27 points, and basically you're going to live with that if that's the result. Well, it's the same concept for these two guys. If it takes you 22 shots to get 25 points, no coach is going to walk out of here and go, oh, wow, that was impressive. But if you score 22 and get everyone else involved and you win, then that's going to be something that's going to impress an opposing coach. Obviously, they all have to game plan for Wall and Beal, and they do that from the start. If you're able to unlock that game plan to some degree, I think that goes further than, you know, I just forced it all night and got some numbers, and now the opposing coaches should like me for an All-Star spot.
Scale of 1 to 10, how much are you buying my All-Star hot take?
I'll put it at a 1. Because Beal...
Can we make the scale 0 to 10 and see what he puts to that?
Beal's been getting shots up all season. I know that he... You know, he's 9th or whatever, he wasn't voting, but that's should be expected. I mean, people are conflating his All-Star chances with the voting. I mean, he was never going to be voted on. So
that's true.
I would hope that he would understand that. I know he's mentioned he'd like to get more votes and passing and things like that. So I think it does matter to him where he is in the voting, but I don't think he's going out there trying to get 50 just because he thinks some kids in, you know, Minnesota are going to give him some extra votes. I mean, and I think they've been doing this all season. That's the only reason why I'm also saying that. This was a problem early on in the season. Beal's got, you know, plenty of shots up there, and Wall does this periodically where he just drives to the rim and, you know, complains about no calls. I mean, he had 4 turnovers. I'm surprised it's so low, but a lot of those drives where he had no shot and just put it up, those were effectively turnovers because they led to 2 points the other way. So, you know, his drives resulted in a lot of points for Milwaukee, almost as much as it did for Washington.
He had one play, I can't remember which, it was the end of one of the quarters. I think it was maybe the end of the second quarter. There was like, I forget where the shot clock was, but with like about 8-10 seconds left in the quarter, he's dribbling in like a way that like that gets the crowd oohing and aahing because it looks fun, but he's got like 3 guys around him, and instead of, oh yeah, I got 3 guys around me, let me throw it somewhere.
Top was wide open underneath while he was doing that.
Yeah, so he does that, ends up taking a long 2, they get the rebound and immediately go down and score a fast break layup and took the lead at halftime, and then they kind of pulled it away a little bit more in the third quarter, which put them in the comeback mode. So yeah, that still happens. And that's frustrating. Let's get to another topic here on the Locked On Wizards podcast. Oh wait, before we get to that, how fun was that Giannis long snap?
The hike.
That was so awesome. I mean, literally, he picked the Blues ball, was bent over, went between his legs like he's Nick Sundberg, and hit Chris Middleton perfectly in stride for a touchdown, for a layup. Wizards aside, Giannis, I mean, was that the quietest 2020 game ever? I mean, it was like you look at the stats, like, oh my lord, how did he do that?
Yeah, well, there wasn't a lot of weak side help, plus he's Giannis. So put those two things together, and there's going to be 20 rebounds for him, just tipping in things at his leisure, coming off the weak side after the guys who were supposedly guarding him were picked, and then the help came for someone else, and then there's Giannis by himself, 8'6" approximately, and then tipping it back in. So that's going to happen.
I do take issue with a couple. He's gotten sort of LeBron-like calls now where he's clearly traveling, taking 3 steps when he's starting from the three-point line.
He's definitely traveling.
And
yes,
They're really letting him get away with that, and it's unfair. One time he got an and-one on Otto where Otto was sort of in front of him the whole time. They let him travel, and then because Otto had some contact when he went up, they gave him the and-one. It's like you can't guard him. You can't contest his threes and also get back if he's going to be allowed to take 3 steps to get to the lane. So, but again, he obviously has other skills that are not just reliant on getting the 3 steps. But that's one thing he really does. They really do let him get away with that too much.
All right, here's my other pet peeve topic. or not pet peeve topic, but something we have to talk about a bunch. And this sort of ties in with this clutch situation you're talking about. Today was another game in which Scott Brooks went to a 9-man rotation. Jody Meeks is out. I know that makes Todd a happy man. Not that he doesn't like Jody Meeks, but has not been working for the most part. Okay, but my contention has been that's fine to go to a 9-man – or sorry, it's fine to bench Meeks. I don't think it's fine to go to a 9-man rotation, though, because he keeps playing these guys more minutes. So, for example, in these five games, John Wall has played 42, 42, 36, 40, 41. Beal has played 42, 40, 36, 43, 41. Now, I understand the LeBron superhuman can play these minutes. I understand that you have to ask your all-star players – to play higher minutes, but this is more of a playoff thing. This is one of four of 82. I know they have a day off tomorrow, but like you keep doing this. They've done this whole stretch.
This is also the third game in four nights. This was a 3-game, 4-night stretch in the middle of that.
And so, look, I get that Jody Meeks is not playing great. Nobody's going to argue the opposite. But this goes either back to, well, okay, then either get somebody else on the bench. By the way, Brooks today essentially confirmed that they're not going to add a second two-way player. Now, if you hypothetically had the second two-way player and it's somebody who you think can maybe give you a few minutes in the backcourt, then you wouldn't have to play these guys as much if you don't think that Meeks can do it. I would argue that you should play Meeks because, I mean, these minutes are too much, and now we're talking about another game in which things are falling apart late. To that point with Beal in particular, in this homestand, in the fourth quarter, 1 for 15 from the field, 0 for 8 in his last 7 games in the fourth quarter, 3 for 27, 0 for 11 from 3. Now, I don't know. Some of that may be starting to get into his head. I don't know what. I'm not saying it's all fatigue. They're obviously all in great shape. But if these things keep happening, playing in them excessive minutes just seems like a lot. And minutes are all relative. Beal runs around a ton on the court trying to get open. And when you then ask him to play point guard, you're putting even more responsibility on him. And John, obviously.
And he has a major defensive assignment, too, every night.
Right. And John typically is running 100 miles an hour up and down the court. Maybe we could question his defense sometimes, but, you know, for the most part, he's moving all over the place. So they're not just, like, passively hanging out.
Well, this is all the more reason also to get everyone else involved and try to take some of the weight off of them usage-wise. But I'm with you. I mean, Beal was at 35.8, I think, after 40 games, which is a career high for him, the 14th highest average in the league. And he was asked, you know, how he felt and whatever, and he said he felt great and he didn't feel burned out and all these other things. But his fourth quarter numbers sure seem to hint that something's going on at the end of the game beyond him just simply missing. I mean, he's getting some pretty good shots and it is a strange, it's just the roster is so strange now with the open spots and the not doing something with another two-way player. Not that that's even a remedy, but it's just common sense-wise, why would you not have try to find something else somewhere especially, that costs so little when you're a capped-out team? It's utterly ridiculous for them to say, we feel comfortable with where you are. What you're doing is you're beating your starters into the ground in the middle of the season because you're being cheap on the back end of the roster. It's baffling.
Especially when I've gone through this a bunch, but, you know, Sheldon Mack out for the year. Okay, that's a waste. That's an empty spot. Chris McCullough essentially doesn't play when he's with the team. And then you literally have an open spot. So it was like, okay, at least if you're taking the advantage of the two-way players with both spots, as essentially all but like 5 or 6 teams in the league have at least two. So it's pretty rare. So at least you're like, okay, at least they're doing that. So they're we can maybe save a few dollars instead of having the 14th guy who won't play much. We'll have the two-ways. But then they cut Mike Young, and now they don't even have that. So it really is frustrating when on top of it you see the minutes that they're putting on these guys. We're only midway through the year. They still have a long way to go, and you're asking John and Brad. By the way, they're about to start a 5-game road trip. Most of their next 10, 15 games are on the road. And that's going to only make it worse if you're playing these guys all these minutes. But whenever asked about it, Brooks never seems to care too much about it. He says they don't practice a ton, so that they can put it more out there. All right, I don't know. But the minutes seem to reflect this. And by the way, one other last thing on this before I let you talk, Mr. Rubin. Let's not forget what happened last year in the playoffs. The reason on part they fell to Boston was the starters were getting tired, and that was because they didn't trust the bench. But apparently you're not trusting the bench again if you're playing them all these minutes. So we just saw this in the playoffs. it's not working. By the way, this does tie into a different point with, of course, with you here. We need to point out Satoransky, of course, now he's not only the backup point guard, he's now officially the backup two guard. So he's now surpassed the two guys they added in the offseason on the depth chart and in the rotation. He's the only guard who's playing behind Wall and Beal in essence right now. So congrats on that. But where are you on this whole minutes saga?
Well, if you look at it specifically, from the bench, Oubre played 35 minutes. So if he's going to get any rest for Wall and Beal, the only two guys who can come in are Mike Scott and Satoransky. So, and Mike Scott, if you go to a small ball, you know, to get minutes to somehow sit Beal down. So Satoransky played 13 minutes. Mike Scott played 16. So if you're going to bench Frazier and you're going to bench Meeks and Jason Smith and McCullough, that's your option. Your option is only Satoransky in the backcourt. And I have no idea why in a game like this he played 13 minutes. He was playing extremely well. He was actually playing defense on whoever he was manned up on. He played well on Giannis one possession. He played much better than Bledsoe. Beal wasn't anywhere near Bledsoe or Wall on multiple shots.
Basically because they were behind. So Brooks, once they get behind, he just doesn't feel comfortable going with the bench. This happened in the last game we went through this where Satoransky didn't play much in the second half because he just goes to Wall and Beal and goes from there.
Yeah, but he can play. He should be. If Meeks is being DNP'd, Satoransky should now be playing at least 15 to 20 minutes a game. Because he can play for both backups. He can play with Beal alongside him and make him the backup point guard. He can play alongside Wall for some as the backup shooting guard. So if you're gonna bench Meeks, there's no other option on the roster. It's going to go to a more roster construction situation.
Well, right. But he played Beal and Wall 41 minutes. Right, exactly. That means there's 14 minutes left over, and he played 12 and a half. So he basically played all of it. He just doesn't – Brooks is not trusting anybody to play more than that.
Right. Adam's saying if you dial back John and Brad by 5 minutes each and then you add that 10 to Satoransky, you get him for 23 minutes and you get them down in the 30s.
And you get a guy who's hustling against this team. There was no – Otto, for whatever reason, I mean, there were rebounds that bounced in front of Otto that he didn't go for. I mean, so for whatever reason, they're not hustling enough. Markieff wasn't hustling as well as he should have today. So I'm just – from the point of getting a guy who's going to hustle out there as well, it helps to have him out there running.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I'm with you on that, but it does seem like it almost doesn't matter, right? I mean, he just and I need to, this is where I need to go back and read all the things people wrote about Brooks at Oklahoma City. But it wasn't part of one of the narratives. He played the starters too many minutes and this, that, and the other. And it feels like we're now, especially in year two of this. I mean, last year I understood the bench was not giving him anything, especially as the season progressed.
Right.
But we're not having that issue as much now. I mean, between Oubre, Scott, Satoransky, right, and Mahimi, who did all play today, they all played at least 12 minutes. And, you know, if you just look at it from a plus-minus perspective.
Yeah, look at the starters versus the bench.
Look at the plus-minus. You have Oubre, Satoransky and Mahimi, I think, were both +8.
Yeah, they were both +8 in basically 12, 13 minutes. And the starters were anywhere from, at best, even to -24.
Yeah, so it's not the issue. Obviously, last year was disastrous. You couldn't go to the bench at all. But here, it just seems like, as you're saying, to play 41 minutes back-to-back, and you're listing what they were playing all five games, it makes no sense, especially in a game like this, where Beal, I mean, the 7 turnovers were atrocious from Beal, and he's not making shots. So, I mean, that's not the guy you have to be forcing out there to run the entire offense.
Also, Milwaukee's on the second night of a back-to-back, so why don't you kind of slow play your starters, and so you have them to play more at the end and have them fresher? Why don't you slow play them late in the first quarter and into the second, and then up their minutes in the second half, that instead of just going with the regular heavy rotation, leave him out there, leave him out there, leave him out there. I think John played all 12 minutes of the first quarter. He was playing well, obviously, but still you're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. Is that the phrase, right? So it just doesn't make sense. A lot of this doesn't make sense on a lot of levels. But the only level it does make sense on is it's sticking with – this is one of the strangest seasons that I think there could be, because we keep bumping into all these flaws. They're what, 9-5 games over now?
25-19.
6 games over 500. We're in here talking about them
as if it's like a disaster.
Like they're 6 games under,
right?
You know, and everyone expected them to be a semi-decent team.
But I guess it just does feel like, I mean, because I think it's also one of those things where we're looking ahead. They have had, because they've had all these games against these under 500 teams that we keep talking about, they've had more of those than a lot of these other teams. They've had one of the easier strength of schedules to date, so we know what's coming ahead. To just to go 2-3 on a homestand when you're about to go on the road for forever is no bueno.
Yeah, and again, it's the two against Milwaukee, okay, you should have, at a minimum, probably split those, but it was the one other one that...
Yeah, the Utah game.
Utah, that makes you roll your eyes, and it's just in keeping with what they've been doing all season. You have a giveaway here, and then you compound it when you play a good team, because that's going to be much more difficult, and if you lose... You know, and a lot of times, sometimes you just lose. They're just better that night. But I can't have the Utahs behind that.
And I would assume, this is not relevant necessarily, but I would assume they didn't cover the spread in any of these games. I mean, because like in Orlando and Brooklyn game, they wasn't, I mean, maybe, I don't know what the spreads were, but you know, presumably, we know those games are too tight, you know, for who the opponents are and the whole situation. So, yeah, I don't know. Play Satoransky more in the first half, play Meeks at all, and then in the second half, if you're like, okay, we're losing, I gotta go to the starters, fine. But to immediately, right off the bat, go that way, it just seems like you're setting yourself up for what happens, seemingly keeps happening. If the issue is you just don't trust anybody, then go get somebody else. Not even say you have to make the big trade now, whatever that may be, but you gotta go do something.
Well, it's interesting because I know Brooks always says that he has a good relationship with Ernie. And, you know, around draft time, and, you know, he always says, I like being here, we talk about things. I'd have to imagine that Brooks is well aware of these issues, and the fact that it's not a small thing that he's benching Meeks. I mean, that's huge. That's their big, small shooting guard acquisition. He does not want to play – I know he's playing Satoransky now as backup point guard. He does not want to play Satoransky as the backup shooting guard. This is out of, like, absolute necessity. And there's so much – you know, there's a two roster spots at the end of the bench. I have to figure Brooks has had a conversation – and maybe, you know, at some point, he's not sitting there saying, I want Satoransky to be my shooting guard. But this is a huge, huge thing to be benching Meeks. Remember, just benching Frazier, it was a huge deal to then DMP him to give it to Satoransky. Now you're benching Meeks and giving him DMPs to give it to Satoransky. That's not the way anybody in the front office was envisioning this season. And that's why I'm so surprised they haven't made a move. But also, there's discussions are being had. I mean, they constantly say Satoransky is, you know, not a point guard, not a shooting guard. He's really a small forward. I mean, there's no way this is in any way keeping with anyone's expectation.
And by the way, they didn't bench Meeks for Satoransky. They benched Meeks to give Wall and Beal more minutes. It's not like Satoransky's playing more. They actually are just playing those other two more. That's the real issue. If they were benching him and Satoransky was getting 20-plus minutes a game, then that would be different. But that's not actually what's happening, which is, I think, sort of the problem we're all talking about. All right, in any event, it's time to get out of here. Todd's giving me the look like, hey, dude, we got to go. So let's get out of here. We got things to do. Happy Monday, early one here. Martin Luther King holiday. I have nothing eloquent to say on the subject other than to say, obviously, it's a time to reflect and all that, and players were asked about it, and some of them had some good thoughts. Check that out. All right, Adam, Todd, appreciate it. Catch you guys later, and to everybody else, see you.
Neal gets open for three. Dagger!
Long drive, long cover shot. Dagger!